Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
New Cyber Frontier podcast. My name is Abe Thompson. We're podcasting from SecureSet here in Colorado Springs. I have the distinct pleasure of having with me Professor Andre Hinton. He's many things, among them professor locally here in Colorado Springs. You have a heart for so many things, Andre. I'd like to welcome you to the show today.
Well, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to have you. So, Andre, in our pre-show discussion, I learned quite a bit about your background, but tell us kind of what your heart is in the cybersecurity discipline, how you got here, and what are the things that are on your heart?
Okay, well, as I tell many of my students, my background is I was here before computers. First generation computers, it was, the Tandy. TRS-80 was my first computer, so a lot of them are like,
That's a little too high speed.
Right, yeah, so.
TI-99, baby, right?
Oh yeah, Commodore 64.
Okay.
So that was kind of like coming from there to now and seeing the progression of when there was no cybersecurity and there was no information assurance and there was no real, need for it in terms of software development and computing, period. There was no real look at how and we're going to secure this data that we're starting to accumulate.
Right.
And it started happening and then all of a sudden, there was now and more recently there's been a real look at the need to secure all of that data that we've accumulated.
Well, and you've got to put structure and order now around this realm. And of course, when you think structure and order, of course, the buzzword of the day is, it's not even a word, it's an acronym, it's RMF, right?
Yes.
And that's certainly an area of expertise for you.
It is.
Talk to me about your experience and vision in the RMF spectrum.
So risk management framework, that is something that was mandated now from the DoD down via 8570. It is now revision 4.
Sure.
And I'm pretty sure there'll be many more revisions to come. And it's just simply taking the data owner and the data and assigning risk to systems and data that we own. And a lot of times that word, I've heard people, even when I've gotten hired in my last, over at the Missile Defense Agency, and a training role that I actually fill there, a lot of the decision makers say to me, well, if people come in here and they don't know RMF, then they don't need to be here. Well, it is, yeah, absolutely. So the thing is RMF is so much more intricate than that. It's more than just knowing how to spell RMF or just saying risk management framework.
Yeah.
To actually look at a system objectively and then talk to the decision makers and then to also talk to the data owners and find out how important the data is.
Sure.
Right? And how, so that stimulates how we're going to protect the data.
Right, right.
Right? How important is this data to you? And we talk to what the system owners, and that's who's supposed to make these decisions.
Yeah.
Well, nowadays, the system owners aren't even involved in that decision-making process. It's a lot of practitioners that go, hey, this is a high-risk data. This is high-risk. And it, in terms many times, it's not. So misappropriating funds to protect data that's not really high-risk is sometimes something that
going on. And it's misappropriation because of ignorance.
Yes.
Rather than some insidious impact. So how does an Army guy done time in the armored cav, how does he end up here in cybersecurity and now having a vision to educate and train this generation and the next in this discipline?
So I'll try to encapsulate my whole, experience in coming into where I am today. And that's, I went into the Army as a medic, believe it or not. But before that, absolutely. I was a computer science major
at
in a university in Texas, sure. Stephen F. Austin State
okay.
University.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And I was a fifth-year senior, because back in those days, computer science, it took five years, period, if not more, to get your computer science degree. And I had a net car accident, fifth year, wound up saying, hey, be all you can be, and I saw that.
Wow.
You
must have hit your head pretty hard then.
We'll pay for your education, and that's all I needed to hear. So I joined the Army, and I asked the recruiter, where are the girls going to be? And he said, in the hospital. And he said, why do you want to do that? You're computer science. And I was like, well, I was 20 years old, and that's where I wound up going.
Oh, dear.
So in the medical field, they wound up still finding out my computer background. So I wound up doing a lot of database work and working on computers in all the hospitals, developing a lot of different databases for housing for their readiness, for deployment readiness.
Well, this is an interesting narrative. Let's take a quick break.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
New Cyber Frontier, our podcast, has the privilege of having as our guest Professor Andre Hinton. He's just telling me about he had a very noble pursuit that ended up getting him into the medical field in the Army, but you ended up being the go-to IT guy,
right.
Just by default, having had a computer science background. And so, you know, this is even before HIPAA, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So it was wide open. There was no information assurance.
Wow.
And I didn't even know what I was doing. I was developing these databases. They were wide open.
Sure.
Right?
Sure. And this friendly Russian gentleman would check in every once in a while.
It was Excel.
Oh, yeah.
And Access database,
yeah, sure.
as well. So I've been a lot of with Access. So fast forward, coming out of the Army, I went to work for AT&T Broadband up in Denver. And I did a lot of IT work for them. Fast forward past that. Went to work as an engineer for Lockheed Martin. Wound up doing a lot of IT work for them. And then fast forward to L3 and JSOC out in the Joint Special Forces Operations.
Mm-hmm.
And I became the IE expert just by default with them.
Okay.
You know, they didn't have an IE guy.
Sure.
And they go, well, we have to be what? We have 180 days to do what?
And they don't like to comply with anybody at JSOC. So.
No, they didn't. So I became the guy, you
nice.
Know, for that.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of was just by trial by fire and information. It wasn't cyber then, of course.
Sure.
There was information assurance.
Yeah.
And fast forward now to where I am in the last year, you know, I was out the missile defense. Well, I actually started with GPS.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I did cybersecurity for GPS over at
sure.
Peterson Air Force Base,
yeah.
Accrediting most of their GPS systems.
Right.
More particular, some of the ones that do the launches.
Right.
And then Missile Defense Agency, I got there and they go, you know RMF? And I go, yeah. And they say, well, we don't want you to do validation, which is what we hired you for. Train our you know, our workforce.
Right.
And so, hence, now I understand that training is probably one of the most important entities within cybersecurity.
Has to be.
I think it's number, in my, I call it Hinton's hierarchy of need, cybersecurity hierarchy of need. And I think that trust is on the very foundation.
Sure.
And then above that is training.
Great.
A lot
Great.
Of people think that there's all these other things that are in between, but I think that at the foundation, it's simply trust.
Yeah.
And then to know who to trust is involved in insider threats and things like that that are involved in the training that people need.
Sure. And clients out there are going to demand, and I think they have the right to demand, the ability to trust in how their data is being managed, cared for, stored, looked after, for
right.
sure, right?
Right.
And so obviously a lot of work inside DoD. You know, funny thing, you know, you talk about RMF and knowing it, but the secret in the room is excuse me, RMF is really just a new term for something we've lived in and breathed for, you know, an eternity inside DoD.
Yes, I would agree. I mean, managing risk and then assigning risk.
Sure.
Right, is simply something that we've termed now, you know, this fancy three-letter word, RMF.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
You know, and so here it is. I don't think it's going anywhere.
No.
I think that it's transcending from the DoD out into the commercial world as well.
Right.
And knowing the risk of your company in terms of, you know, vulnerabilities, you know, to know your vulnerabilities is half of the battle, to
sure.
know what's vulnerable, how vulnerable you are, and then simply to know if someone gets in, how, you know, how valuable is the data that's being exploited.
Right. So in other words, you know, at what cost do I have to expend to address this vulnerability?
Yeah.
Is it a you know, company ender? Is it a, you know, inconvenience? Is it a, you know, anomaly? It's good. Andre, in our pre-show discussion too, I heard your heart for education and training, and obviously, you know, with the title professor, you live it and breathe it. What's your philosophy of education in this space?
Yeah, in the cybersecurity realm, I just think it's pertinent, just to know what's out there and to educate yourself on what's possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of what, how you can fit. It's, the field is so broad, you can pick anything and be a specialize on that one thing.
Sure.
And it's a need.
Sure.
In the world, like, you're fulfilling a need. Find one place in cyber, become educated on that,
mm-hmm.
and become, you know, the subject matter expert on that, for instance, blockchain.
Right.
And
I don't know anybody that's really, oh, hi.
Oh, Christopher Gorog.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Christopher Gorog and I have been friends now for almost, you know, a couple of years, and he's the one who brought me into CTU mm-hmm. as a professor. And to me, I don't think there's anyone else who has dedicated their lives to one thing, and that's blockchain. Now, that could take a whole nother podcast to talk about. But it's my belief right now that that is something that is going to revolutionize cybersecurity as we know it. And that's that word that we talked about, trust.
Sure. Well, and it's a micro revolution inside of it,
it all,
inside of the revolution that is cybersecurity, right?
Right.
I mean, you and I have blinked and we've seen this transition from no framework, from no clear web, from, you know, so many things. And now, you know, we were just joking about the Compaq and the Tandy and the TI,
right.
And now we're in this, you know, multi-level security and blockchain environment.
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't get this in, that we're continuing to do the same thing over and over again, expecting different results in cyber.
Now, in the dictionary, doesn't that come out as
insanity?
Yeah.
And so blockchain is the thing that we haven't done before,
mm-hmm.
right? In terms of broad use in cybersecurity. You know, and so I hear people saying, well, we're not gonna do blockchain, we're not interested in blockchain. But I'm saying, well, what are you interested in doing? Oh, the same thing you've been doing. Interesting. How's that working out for you?
Security has never been convenient, and it never involves necessarily a comfort zone for anyone, right?
Right.
And that's certainly a reality that we as educators would insist upon. But you haven't just stayed in the area of just the education space. You've actually started sort of your own entity called the Global Information Systems.
That's correct.
Can you talk to us a little bit more about what's your heart and your vision and what you're up to?
I tell you what, I just started Global Information Systems like a year and a half ago. And it goes back to what I mentioned earlier, is the need for training. And right now, Global Information Systems is going to provide consulting back to the DoD
mm-hmm.
In cybersecurity, but more specifically, training on risk management framework.
Okay. And to the, let me say, layperson, because we have a very diverse audience, describe or give an example of what the risk management framework is for someone outside of the DoD.
Sure. I guess most people would want to know, okay, it starts with data,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it starts with the data owners, as I mentioned before, and say, for instance, let me try to have something within the DoD space. You've got GPS.
Yeah.
And they've got satellite data. Much of that satellite data is, you can actually Google it and get it.
Sure.
So the confidentiality, integrity, and availability of that data is low, right? It's
right.
Because anyone can obtain it.
Right.
And so when we begin in RMF, there's a, what's called the, you know, we want to categorize the data. That's step one. Mm-hmm. And so you take data, the only way it can be categorized is between low, moderate, or high, right? And so that's usually the data owner that says, well, this data is going to be categorized from a confidentiality. If this data is pretty confidential or it's not, and then you categorize that data based on the, not just the system owner, you have the engineers, you have a lot of other people who are there as decision makers who do categorization for that data.
So there's both a security dimension in terms of categorization, but it also sounds like there's a value of the data.
Yes.
Categorization.
Yeah, based on that system owner. Then the step two, and we could go on and on with step six, but the step two is just as critical, because then you take the NIST documentation, which is the NIST 853, and you want to do what's called tailoring of the categorization of that data.
Right.
And that is, lining up, what is actually applicable to your system.
Right.
If it's something that's mobile data and you don't actually have, any type of mobile equipment, then that would not be tailored into your system.
Sure.
Right.
Let's take a moment and
we'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
Cyber Frontier. This is Abe Thompson. We're podcasting from SecureSet campus here in Colorado Springs, our cybersecurity boot camp programs. I have the delight and privilege of having in the studio with me Professor Andre Hinton, and we're kind of covering the gambit of his sort of technology experience, but also looking at his interface and his vision for trading inside of the RMF space. And so you were taking us through the various steps of RMF and kind of helping the layperson generally understand why this has become such a big deal.
And that's I was on step two, which was actually tailoring in which controls are applicable to your system.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Step three would be to actually apply those controls to say, okay, well, now these are things we need to apply to our system to secure the system based on, number one, the categorization, then number two, based on, the tailoring, and then now we do the application.
Yeah.
Step four would be actually going to an approval authority, which was your AO, which says, okay, well, based on what I see, you've done your due diligence, you've categorized your data, you've tailored it in based on 853 NIST,
mm-hmm.
and now you've applied those controls, and then now I'm gonna take a look at everything that you've done, right? And I'm going to make a decision. And looks like to me you've deemed your system moderate, right? Moderate on confidentiality, integrity, and availability.
Sure.
And he makes a recommendation that I'm going to give you an authority to operate for a said amount of time, if it be a year to 2 years to 3 years of that.
Sure. So. And I would imagine too, the other component is training those that are going to go out and certify sort of these systems in this network. So you and I might remember that from military days of information assurance and vulnerability assessment.
Right.
How is that process modernized, improved?
In terms of the training?
Sure, the training and then actually the processes.
Well, that's when SecureSet comes in.
Right? Indeed.
I mean, it wasn't available when I was in the Army.
Sure. I mean,
that was not something that You know, you went and did like this online training that was everyone did it, and you hit next. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you didn't listen to anything. You didn't read it. You approved. Hey, I'm cybersecurity approved.
Yes.
And that was that. And that's kind of where things were. But I'm finding out that the Army has done things like bring companies like SecureSet in. And I think that speaks volumes to how important it is to the Army. Now, I don't know at all the other COCOMs.
Sure.
If they're doing the same thing, I would definitely say they should be. If they're not,
Air Force has paid some attention. But what's critical is now, instead of next, what really matters, especially if you're going to get a job in this industry, is your ability to demonstrate proficiency.
Right.
You know, and for us academians, theory is great. Theory is one thing, but practice is also essential. We talk about this triad of employability, right? Education is essential, but not sufficient. Certifications are essential, but not sufficient.
Right.
And so what's the third piece of that triangle? And that's experience. Yes. Or practical application is also essential.
And that's something that I pride myself in, the way that I instruct. Mm. Is students come in and they don't just get lecture. Mm-hmm. You know, I employ them to come in and say, this is like a job.
Yeah.
And so you walk into my classroom, I actually interview my students the first day.
Nice.
As if they were actually coming in to work. And I say, okay, so do you plan, what type of person, do you come to work every day? Or are you gonna come to class every day? Mm-hmm. Every time there's a class? Mm-hmm. Oh no, I got this going on. I say, well, you're probably not a good fit for this course.
Right. Wow, what a shift, you know?
Poor. Yeah, you need to take a different one.
This isn't what they told me college was.
Right. Okay. And so, but then I said, okay, well, before the interview's over, as a student, I go, I'll tell you what, welcome to CSS, whatever course it is, 150, you're hired. Hmm. So now they're employed in my class. They're not taking the class.
Splendid. I like that. I like that approach. And so what are your sort of in your checks for learning and your assessments, what do you have them doing?
It depends on the course. Right. Mm-hmm. Now I'm teaching computer forensics. Mm-hmm. And so they actually sit down on a workstation, a computer forensics workstation, and they actually go through, you know, what a computer forensics expert would be.
Sure.
Or do the analysis. Now, yeah. I also do what's called mock trials.
Yeah.
So I'll have them, you know, one will be a prosecutor, one will be the defendant, one will be, you know, the person who's being defended.
Sure.
You know, and I'll have them go through a mock trial. And not only that, I'll come in one day and they'll do a mock investigation.
Excellent.
Right? And so they'll do the investigation, which sparks the trial, and it all comes together, and they have to do the analysis.
Sure.
And so it's not a lecture, they're actually doing this.
Yeah, and that's absolutely what's needed. And then you can confirm, you know, whether they have preserved the evidence correctly and you know, found the right type of evidence. Have they cleared out the noise? You know, I love it. Love it. Now you're speaking my language. Speak to me a little bit more about some of the other steps or levels in your Hinton's hierarchy of need. That's a really great visual.
Hey, I tell you what, that's just the buzz now. Maybe that'll become real.
Yeah, you say it enough, you know, moving to, you know, what's Maslow got, right? You know?
Well, I think that cyber needs that hierarchy, mm-hmm. you know, but I think that at the foundation, as I mentioned, it's trust. Mm-hmm. And then it's training. And then it kind of goes as the need for the company from that point, right?
Sure.
A lot of times, you know, we look at how, what data we're protecting, because I think above the training is data and how we're going to protect data and how valuable that data is.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And I think we talked about that within RMF. So I actually start doing more of an RMF process after step two of the hierarchy, the Hinton's hierarchy of need, you know, because we want to categorize the data and say that, I mean, if it's data that anyone can get, then why would we spend millions of dollars protecting it? Yeah. And that's happening.
Yeah. Oh,
right. It's
plenty of lessons have been learned to lead to that expenditure for sure.
There's a system that's low, and most of that data can be obtained any way that you want to get it, via any mode of just Googling that data.
Sure.
And the DoD somehow, and that's the thing is, I talked about insider threat and threat intelligence, which is something that I keep mentioning, Chris Gorog, we talk about, that's missing. and to know a little bit about the threat, which is in this hierarchy of need, to know who's trying to get your data, to know a little bit about what they plan to do with it, what they could do with it, who is it? Is it China? Is it, you know, who is it that's actually looking at obtaining your data and what they could actually do with it? Sure. So what's the risk and what could they actually do to someone else, you know, in terms of obtaining the data that you're protecting?
You know, with RMF being an area of specialization, you know, that you've chosen and that you recognize, and it's definitely a sought after skill, a potential point of tension in education models might be this notion of, you know, you've received advice and wisdom to specialize in one thing, but what about when we get these cybersecurity budding professionals started? You know, one of the models that we adhere to is we create a generalist across the domains so that they are now ready then to dive into one or more areas. Is that a model that you see value in as well?
I think 100%.
Okay.
I think that's the model to go with.
Indeed.
I think that we have that sparks the conversation.
Sure.
Right, and it doesn't guide you a certain way. You have many people across that domain who can actually provide valuable data.
Sure.
You know, and that our data can be collected, and you can make decisions based on that particular entity.
Sure. Do you think, just sort of a thought point, has RMF, just because of it being the buzzword of the day, has it created its own new domain? Do you think people think about it more and appropriately so than they did in the past?
I just think that they're right now, industry-wide, people hear RMF and they really just don't know what it is. They just think that it's this thing
which to me
that we have to abide by.
And that could bring out some charlatans, I think, as well. You know, that, oh, you don't know what let me be the guy to solve your problems, right? So how do these So sort of the mom and pops and some of these enterprise consumers, how do they discern?
Well, one of the things, and I'll kind of go back, because DiCAP was what was being used before RMF.
Yeah.
And now I call the version of RMF that's being used, you know, globally, RIACAP, right? Because what they've done is they've continued to use DiCAP principles within RMF.
Oh, right? Yeah, definitely.
Because continuous monitoring is the whole concept of RMF, is to not to have, you know, a time where your system's going to expire. There's no more expiration supposedly in RMF.
Right.
However, they're still expiring.
Yeah.
Right? So they're still, and so when I ask them, so what are you doing in terms of, you know, continuous monitoring? Well, we're still waiting for guidance from the DOD. They're not going to give you any more guidance.
Well, and that's no longer
acceptable. Your guidance.
Right, right. And, you know, it isn't just that your system is pristine when you know there's an inspection, right? Or the compliance guys are coming through, or stakeholders want to know. It's not just because the board meeting is coming up. It's constant monitoring, constant tweaking, constant maintenance. And that's probably, you know, well, not probably. It truly is the best model. It's really the only sustainable model.
It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Continuous monitoring, if anything, they can call it something else. Maybe I'm guessing when they get tired of the word RMF or risk management framework, they're going to come up with some other intricate name to call it.
Hintonizing maybe.
I like that. Yeah, ring to it.
We'll go with that. We'll get it going. Lovely. Lovely. Help the professional that has to go in and convince either a Luddite CEO or someone who just doesn't want to spend money in cybersecurity. How do they go in and turn the tide with their CEOs and with the C-suite that doesn't understand?
So I'll use an analogy, which I talk about health and fitness.
Okay.
Right. And I tell people if you don't want to exercise or spend the money on exercise and nutrition now, save money to spend on doctor bills.
Oh. There you go.
Right.
Okay.
because what's going to happen is you're going to get ill if you don't take care of this problem now, and then later you're going to have a whole lot of other problems because they go, well, I don't want to spend money on this now because, you know, it's going to cost me. Well, prepare for the rainy day because you're going to get high cholesterol.
Yeah.
You're going to have all these other diseases. And no, so cyber, what I'm looking at is if, same thing, either you do the due diligence now, are you going to pay later?
Sure.
Right? For data breaches, for insider threat, for all of these things that you aren't really spending and giving attention to now.
Sure.
So well, either pay for it now,
yeah,
or pay for it later.
And pay for it now in the form of actually training people.
That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, establishing trust and then training your people. I like this. This guy's got some stuff here. I'm excited. All right. So on the horizon, obviously RMF is there, but what's next? What's the next big thing?
You know, just look at the world. Look what's happening. You know, I mean, we're losing the battle. And, you know, I say that passionately because it's been my data that's been exploited.
Yeah.
More than once, you know, in the DOD. And if anyone has their data, I don't want to get into the details. But, mm-hmm. you know, we're losing the battle in the cyber warfare.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would like to see the tides turn. And I know you're looking, you know, I'm looking to say what's next. But I would like to think that the next thing is we're going to start to gain ground, start winning battles in cybersecurity on our front. Well, and then to acknowledge that we're losing.
Sure.
You know,
well, the simple glaring thing is this complete gap in a ready workforce. And you and I both know as educators, it's about training more and getting them ready.
I think it's almost too, I think a good analogy is turning surgeons loose who haven't even gone to med school.
Mm.
Yeah. And saying, hey, I want you to go in and I want you to perform open heart surgery on this person.
Well, sure, because I have.
I slept on a Holiday Inn Express last night.
Now, yeah, you got IT on your door, so yeah, you go ahead and do the security piece too. Yeah, just go ahead and pick that up. You know, yeah, and that gets my goat. Certainly, we are an industry in and of ourselves. And ladies and gentlemen, we've had the privilege of hearing today from Professor Andre Hinton. You know, an educator. A man of passion in this discipline and an RMF SME, oh, by the way, if you need some assistance and help out there. I'm here on the new Cyber Frontier podcast. My name is Abe Thompson, and I've had the privilege of podcasting from SecureSet campus here in Colorado Springs. Thank you, Professor Hinton, for being with us.
No, thank you. It was a privilege.
Indeed. The privilege was all mine and all of yours out there in the listening world.
Views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.